I'm staring at the eviction notice. I'm frozen, terrified. I'm thinking about Laura, my little daughter, and my baby who'll be born into homelessness. Today, I can tell you straight up, if it wasn't for Threshold and the people who donate to them, me and my girls would be homeless.
Threshold saves 9 families every day from homelessness. Please support our At Home for Christmas appeal. Help us stop homelessness before it happens.
Visit threshold.ie to make an instant Christmas donation.
Hello and welcome to the Echo Chamber podcast. My name is Tony Groves, and today we're delving into a bit of an exclusive, as he said, you know, because you had to undersell it. It's only a bit of an exclusive, Martin.
A bit of exclusive from one of the best brains in the country, Tony.
I said undersell, Martin. Were you not listening when we began? Just a reminder, you've probably just heard a quick ad from Threshold for the homelessness prevention that they do. We are obviously putting those ads in over the course of Christmas. And if you can, maybe help them out. Obviously, absolutely help us out by all accounts. But still, if this is the season we do these things, and prevention of homelessness is a lot better than actually people having to go through the process in the first place. And I think it's estimated a Threshold up to 42 families a day currently. So it's well worth putting your hands in your pocket. So anyway, we are joined by regular Tortoise Shack favourite. And Martin, you're right. He is a bit of a brilliant mind. But Simon McGarr, solicitor, dad and nerd, analyst, and also, how do I say this, a person who is representing some of the survivors of the mother and baby homes. And Simon, you did write a really fascinating piece today in what your, again, your newsletter that comes out regularly enough, sometimes more irregularly. But
I think we're going to say once a fortnight, but sometimes with bonus episodes, then try to overpromise beyond that.
Absolutely. but I would say to people, if you're not subscribed, absolutely well worth it. But today's one was particularly thought provoking. I've seen it now on social media gathering a lot of interest from mainstream channels, have picked it up and said that this is something that, you know, is of interest. Do you want to just, if you can, give us a brief outline of it? And I might ask the questions that maybe people are thinking about.
So I suppose we'll say what was newsworthy or noteworthy today, and then we'll go back and see how did we get to that point.
Okay.
So what I was able to tell people today was that the European Commission has opened an investigation into Ireland's refusal to give mother and baby home survivors their GDPR right of access to their health records. And it wrote to me in my capacity as a solicitor for some of those survivors who was looking to help them get access to their records. And it said that it has written to the minister. It has got a reply back. And so they're now looking, because I've sent them on further information based on the reply that they got, into the Birth Information and Tracing Bill, which is the new piece of legislation. And I have to say, often promised, but only recently produced piece of legislation to ensure that people who have been adopted, not merely from mother and baby homes, but that people who have been adopted would have access to information about their identities, their pre-adoption identities. So I suppose that's the headline, that there's an active investigation from the European Commission into Ireland, ongoing breach. And I suppose it's worth perhaps going through how did we end up having an active investigation when in January 2021, when the original Commission investigation into the Mother and Baby Homes report was published, one of the major points that the government was at pains to stress was that we will ensure that people can access personal information contained within the Commission's records in line with the GDPR. And having set that bar, they then immediately failed to cross, to cover, to get over it. And I mean, the bar isn't that high, because it's just we will do what the law requires of us. And unfortunately, they have not given access to people's medical records. This is particularly of interest to a certain number of survivors who believe they may, or who have reasons to believe that they may, have been involved in trials of vaccines. And while they were infants within the mother and baby homes. And obviously their medical records would be particularly significant. But what the department said when they wrote in looking for their personal data was that they would not give these people their own medical records. And they said if they wanted them, they could nominate a doctor who would look at them and decide which of them they should have access to. Now, this is entirely contrary to the right of access under the GDPR, but it follows a line of a statutory instrument, which is a kind of a secondary level of legislation, not a full act. It's a thing done under an act, signed by Jerry Collins, who some of your elderly listeners may remember.
This is the 1989 piece that you're referring to.
That's right. A 1989 statutory instrument signed by Jerry Collins saying that people shouldn't have access to their medical records directly and that it was for doctors to decide what was right for them to see. So obviously that's been superseded by the GDPR. And to be fair, I don't think that anybody's asserting that the GDPR isn't in conflict with this domestic law. What's happened is that the government is refusing to do what governments are meant to do when there's a conflict with domestic law. Now, that was set out by the Court of Justice. There's a long line of case law, but the most recent one, you'd be unsurprised to learn, actually came out of a case from Ireland where the Workplace Relations Commission was being sued by the Minister for Justice and Garda Síochána on the basis that it was being challenged on the basis that it wanted to apply European law directly. And they were saying, you're not allowed to do that. You have to take a case or wait for us to change the law and then you can apply the law. You don't have the kind of powers to put in European law. And what the court said in Luxembourg, it says, bodies called upon within the exercise of their respective powers to apply EU law are obliged to adopt all the measures necessary to ensure EU law is fully effective, disapplying, if need be, any national provisions or national case law that are contrary to EU law. But it went a little bit further. It then said, this means that those bodies, in order to ensure that EU law is fully effective, must neither request nor await the prior setting aside of such a provision or such case law by legislative or other constitutional means. In other words, if you're the data controller, which the minister is in respect of these records, you don't wait for the statutory instrument to be repealed or replaced. You just act as though it did not exist. You disapply it.
So basically, Simon, the EU law has supremacy. Your domestic law, you don't need to have an act or legislation to set it aside. The very existence of EU law sets it aside.
Yeah. Yes.
Can I make one quick point on that, which is really funny because we've seen this debacle and it's a digression, Simon, but please bear with me. We see all this nonsense over the Northern Ireland Protocol, all of these rules and the UK not wanting to take any good judgment from the ECJ and what that means for them. And yet, and Ireland keeps saying, well, you have to. And yet here we are, effectively, doing exactly what the British government are doing, but in one of the most dark and troubled parts of our history. It's just, it has to be pointed out.
Now, not only have we got that very clear guidance from the court that I was quoting there, but not only did the minister get written to by me explaining why this idea was wrong and he ought to disapply it, and that the response back from the department was, we have to follow the law, to which my response was, on behalf of my clients, yeah, you have to follow the law. So disapply that Irish law and follow the superior law. But not only that, they actually were contacted by officials from the Data Protection Commission who wrote to the minister's officials this year, in June, and said, I'm of the view the manner in which the Department of Handling such requests, SARs pertaining to health data, is not appropriate to the circumstances. And while Section 68 of the Data Protection Act saved SI 82 of 89, this is Jerry Collins's SI, it did so in the expectation new regulations would be made, which would take account of the requirements of the GDPR, of Article 23 of the GDPR. And it cannot be the case that the considerations in play in 1989 would have foreseen the specifics of the current situation, or that the SI was intended to apply to a scenario such as the department is now dealing with, i.e. a big ball of records on foot of a commission of inquiry, landed in their laps.
Accepting all of that and your preeminence when it comes to these matters, but can I ask the other things that happened internally? It does appear that the minister in charge of this, Roderick O'Gorman, has looked around for other ways to try and, whether you want to say share the responsibility for this is probably a diplomatic way of putting it. And he has failed to find anybody, a dance partner, to join him in his way to, I'm going to use the word, obfuscate what needs to be done.
Well, his first instinct was to write to the Minister for Justice and ask the Minister for Justice to change the law. The very thing the court says you're not meant to do, to wait for a legislative provision before you apply GDPR. Now, as he wrote to the Minister for Justice, he actually acknowledged that this was a major problem. He said the broad reach of the regulations imposed a significant restriction on the fundamental right of access of data subjects to personal information about themselves. That's the Minister for Children. But he's the minister in charge of solving that problem. And indeed, the Minister for Justice's department wrote back and said, any minister can make laws and change and make regulations. And I invite you to do so, either on your own or in conjunction with other ministers.
But not content with that, he went again.
Well, I mean, not me, says the little red hen. So he's decided the best place to go was the Department of Health. After all, what else have they been got to do to pass the time in recent months? And so he seems to be waiting on the Department of Health to pass a law in this area. And he himself is not, in the meantime, doing the thing that EU law says he has to do. And as Simon, I say...
Could he, right this moment, just turn around and say, EU law has supremacy, therefore I'll act in within EU law, no letters to anybody, no dance partners, and here's the information.
100%. There's no new law that needs to be passed here. There's not a single piece of legislation that needs to be passed to give effect to EU law. The EU law is directly effective, and it is clearly the superior law to a 1989 statutory instrument. And he's been told by both the regulator, and he's acknowledged as close to it as he possibly could in his own email to the Minister for Justice, that this is in breach of the GDPR. So, and indeed, in his own reply to the European Commission, because they then wrote to the department, and they got a reply from the department and the minister's officials. And they said, the Minister for Health is progressing new regulations concerning access to health data as a matter of priority. And officials from the Department of Children are liaising with the Department of Health on this issue. That's what his department said.
But Simon, just as kind of a tangent, I made a GDPR request for all my medical records last year. And they were sent to me without any problem. Any problem whatsoever.
That's right. It seems to me that this is an SI which particularly bedevils the survivors of mother and baby homes, and particularly seems to affect access to medical records for adopted people more generally.
If I can be the stone in the shoe, we have to recall that this initially we were told, well, advice of the Attorney General said I can't do this, and I can't do that, and GDPR doesn't apply, and I think. At this stage, Simon, if I recall correctly, you weren't even really actively involved in this. It was at that point where you took a personal interest in this, saying, well, whoa back the horses.
I always am interested to hear the Attorney General is giving advice on the GDPR. That's of interest to me. But the advice that was being assigned to the Attorney General seemed so radically at odds with my understanding of what the requirements of the law would be that I had to take a little bit more time to get my head around it. And in the end, I came to the opinion that the claimed advice of the Attorney General was inaccurate, the one that the minister was advancing. And then, unfortunately for the minister, the Attorney General came to the same conclusion at a cabinet meeting where he advanced his official's line to the cabinet to explain why it was, when he was, as it was then, that the GDPR wouldn't apply to these records and they would be sealed for 30 years. And the Attorney General sitting at the table went, no, that's not my advice.
And that is, and as I suppose that's the central point here, because you've got to remember, again, for listeners' benefits, just cast your mind back to this time last year. We were up in arms over what was actually happening here. Sealing of records. Survivors were livid, and a record number of emails and letters and complaints were received. And all of a sudden, things started to move. But as so often the case is, as Simon outlined at the beginning of this conversation, they then set a bar and then failed to clear it. Where to now, Simon? Is it now that the ECJ is effectively involved as an investigation? Do we just still, because I'm going back to the phrase again, delay, deny, and wait for me to die.
I mean, so the ECJ isn't involved. It's the European Commission.
Does
the investigation. I mean, there is no reason why the minister could not simply apply GDPR today and tomorrow if he felt it was too late in the evening. But there's nothing to prevent the GDPR from being applied and for people to be given direct access to their medical records. And every day that that doesn't happen is a day when people's fundamental rights of access are denied. And it is particularly frustrating, we'll say, from the point of view of a practitioner, when you recognize that there doesn't seem to be an argument about the legality. Everyone seems to agree that this statutory instrument needs to be not the one that is given force. And yet there's an argument about what is the easy part, which is what is the standard method of dealing with domestic law, which is in dispute with EU law, because that's the settled case law. We have case law running back for decades, most recently the one I just quoted with the Workplace Relations Commission, which says when that happens, you just apply the EU law directly. And for that to be the thing that the government simply will not do, and the minister simply does not do, it's both baffling, but also it is desperately frustrating to see people who just want access to their own information left hanging around for some sort of functionally useless administrative act before they are given their own information and they're given their rights, which they were given under the Charter of Fundamental Rights and under the GDPR for face saving. I don't know the reason, but whatever the reason is, it's not a good one.
Simon, given that, is there any way to compel the minister to uphold the GDP rights?
There's a complaint in already with the Data Protection Commission exactly on this question. The Data Protection Commission has the power to order the minister to take such steps as they think are appropriate to uphold data protection law. The last time the Data Protection Commission did that was on the public service card that I can think of. And that's still under appeal 2 years later.
And the government recently were telling us, A, that we've run over on budget on that again, but it's also a great success if you want to read some of the pieces that were printed, you know. So the DPC itself did that, like, what was that?
And the alternative is, if your regulator can't take action, then you force people to take action themselves through the courts. That puts an enormous onus of risk on individuals, because all forms of litigation involves risk. And it's simply not appropriate that people should have to force the state to do the thing it should do anyway, to follow its own rules.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. That's a great point, Simon. So where to? What now?
As far as I know, the investigation from the European Commission continues. They haven't told me otherwise. They are currently in receipt of the bill. And I should say to you that despite all the friendly sounds that the minister has made about changing the regulations, his new bill at head, which will be section 10.2 of the bill, has exactly the same restriction and requires medical records to be provided to a medical practitioner into a nominated doctor instead of directly to the people who are looking for their records. So despite saying that he thinks that it's an interference in the fundamental rights of access in relation to people, here he is currently right now advancing new law that has the same restriction in it.
Well, I'm not going to ask you to comment on this, and I do want to bring this to a close, but I'm also cognizant of the compensation scheme that was announced and how it was lauded as the largest of its kind in the history of the state. And speaking to people involved actively who've covered it, from the Clan Project to survivors to journalists who've covered it for a long time. And they all pointed out that the government then got kudos for the Oak report. And then they ignored the recommendations of it because they took out anything about family separation. They literally focused on time in there, and you know, and they reduced it down to, you know, here's effectively, let's set a bar at $5,000 and we'll go from there. And we were all supposed to think that this was a great thing because the minister said very positive things. And unfortunately, too often things get reported just as a press release as opposed to actually any nuance in it. And this seems to be a similar situation, Simon.
Well, in respect of the compensation scheme, I would refer people back. I did a sort of a critical analysis of the scheme on which it is explicitly based, which is the one that was set up on foot of the Quirk report following mm-hmm. the Magdalen Laundries. That was the compensation scheme in relation to that. And what's interesting is that that scheme, Judge Quirk was very clear about what he thought the purpose of that scheme was. He says, the payments which I'm recommending are expressly required by my terms of reference to be ex gratia in nature. And the same here with this compensation scheme that's being proposed. And he goes on and he says, they are not and do not purport to comprise full and complete damages to compensate the Magdalen women for the injury and loss caused by the wrongdoing of the state. Compensation payments of that kind can, in general, only be calculated and awarded after a detailed process. Now, what that means is this is built with the stated intention to leave you short of what you are due. It's a settlement offer. Yeah. Will you settle your case at less value to get it sooner? Or will you settle your case at lower value than you would get if you took it to court on foot of buying off risk? All of those are rational and reasonable choices to make. But let's be clear, the state has decided to deliberately offer people less than they would be entitled to.
And the provision in that is that they can't then go to the courts if they accept that, Simon. Am I right?
But it's a settlement. You're buying off the risk of litigation with money. And the question is, will the person who has that right accept the money and do the deal where they get less money than they would get? But the state doesn't have to do less money. It could pay people the full amount ex gratia. It doesn't have to offer them less. It's chosen to do so.
Well, we've seen, can I say one thing before on that? We've seen within the last week the difference of when there's a political price to pay on the scheme that has been put forward for the MICA redress in the homes. I mean, it dwarfs anything that's been put forward in the mother and baby home scandal. Don't forget that. They may not like you making that comparison, but that's the fact. It dwarfs it by a multiple of hundreds of times per case. Sorry, Martin.
Simon, I was just going to say thanks very much for coming on and sharing this with us. As always, and I know your work is appreciated by so many people, but Tony and I always appreciate your work, always. And thank you very much for doing what you do.
Well, you're both very kind. And I told you I could manage to get in under half an hour, and you didn't believe me. And that is truly the thing I'm most proud of today.
Simon McGarr. Oh, and if we're not talking on air, happy Christmas to you and your family. Simon.
Thank you very much. It's Christmas here already, as you can see from my reindeer themed jumper. I've decided that it's a full month of Christmas. So we all need something to look forward to.
Well, I look forward to Martin's Wi-Fi going down in Storm Barra tomorrow, and we all get some peace. Listen, folks, we'll be back tomorrow. There's lots coming. I've told you already. Dr. Marie Casey, brilliant in public health, she's coming. Bolani Mfako from Massey is also lined up, and Rory has a panel of teachers, which should be interesting given that they've been told schools are safe and now they're not safe, so that'll be interesting. Talk to you all very, very soon. Take care. Bye bye.
Tony and Martin, Martin and Tony, speaking to interesting people only. It's the Podcast. Subscribe now on Patreon.